Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer and the Vape Show, giving voice to 78 million boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Each day we have a different guest and a different topic. Our guests always have a nugget or two for anyone, regardless of where you are. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now, here are the Boomer and the Vape, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And it is the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's Tuesday, April 26th, 2011, and we're broadcasting from our studio at the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngstown, Arizona. We'll be getting to our guests in just a minute, but before we do, I want to make sure that we invite everybody to listen, our listeners, to go to our website at www.boomerandthebabe.com. Take a little tour around the site and see everything that the Boomer the Babe Incorporated is involved in. In addition to this radio program, we publish mini books, ebooks. Our authors have their own shows on Boomer and the Babe Network here on Blog Talk, and we invite you to listen to those as well. We produce videos, promotional products, and consult for small businesses. We are truly a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company. And today we're doing a little bit of a reprise on something we tried to do last week that due to technical difficulties, we missed the opportunity. So we have some guests back today. This is the Entrepreneurial Revolution Show, and it's basically our thought that everything being what it is in the political system today, state, local, whatever, federal, it doesn't matter. We have to, as entrepreneurs, we have to take things into our own hands, make sure we're taking care of ourselves, our business, and our families, and therefore we're calling it the only way to get it done is through these means is an entrepreneur, and this is the entrepreneurial revolution, because it's going to be us entrepreneurs that get the country out of the economic doldrums that we're in. There's no doubt about that. We had a political gentleman on yesterday, the business liaison for Congressman Trent Franks, who was a guest of Ron Naraki on Wealth DNA, and he said the same thing, that he realizes and the legislators realize that it's going to be the entrepreneur. It is the entrepreneur that makes things go, and it's up to them, in theory, to help us get our things going and to get out of our way as far as he's concerned. We certainly would like to see them do that. And in the event that they don't, we still have to do it ourselves. So if it's to be, it's up to me. And that's, I think, kind of the way it is with all of us entrepreneurs. Well, today in studio, I have two guests. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. That way you can put the sound of their voice with the name. And then we'll get into some discussions about entrepreneurism, what they do, and how it's working for them in this economy that we're all facing and fighting with today. So we have a young lady who is our first guest. So, Barbie, why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Barbie Bosler, and I am the manufacturer of the glass and mirror etching product called Etch-All. The name of our company is B&B Products Incorporated. And I'd like to ask you to join with us and become your own entrepreneur in our way we do things, BYOB, be your own boss.
That's what we've all got to do. And we are our own bosses right now. The next person I have in studio with me is Gary. Gary, why don't you give us a thumbnail of who you are and what you do?
All right, everyone. I'm Gary King, and I am the owner operator, and I am your be your own boss for BK Plumbing and Bath. We are a family-owned and operated business, a residential and light commercial plumbing service company. We started the business in 2002. Actually, our son started the business in 2002, and we have a combined professional experience of over 50 years in the plumbing repair and service business.
So you've both been at this for a little while, and you've both seen several business cycles up and down, I'm certain. Did you start your businesses as a necessity because you were downsized or fired, or is it something that you discovered in research because you wanted to start a business? Barbie, how did you get going, and what caused you to get your business off the ground?
Well, art is my background, crafts and any kind of art, and so it was something I always wanted to do. So 35 years ago, I owned and operated my own store, and while there, I came across this fantastic chemist, and he had this product called Etch-All. It etches on glass, mirror, marble, slate, and china, and I wanted to take this and make it a household world and get a jar of etching cream in every home in the world, and that's why I started this, and I continue to do this. And I need help with people out there to do the same thing. Because, hey, everybody's got glass in their home, whether it's a jelly jar or a window or a door or a mirror. So you can do it. So you just have to start somewhere and do it.
So it's safe to say that you were looking for something to do as a business that was related to your background and to your education and to your interests. Is that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people out there that have got that same interest, and don't think you have to have talent. It's just that desire to do something.
Okay, Gary, how did you become a plumbing contractor? Did you just decide that these two pipes are leaking and I got to fix them, and then say, boy, I really like doing this, or how did that work?
Well, as I previously alluded to, our son actually started a business in 2002. I'm actually retired military, 24 years in the Navy and Army combined, and then I left the Peoria Police Department as a property and evidence technician to primarily help our son just kind of get the licenses going and the taxes and all that stuff. And then eventually we combined everything and grew the business, and primarily just to assist him and get things going. And next thing you know, I'm doing it full time. So really
so
enjoy it.
Would you say that you found the business, or the business found you?
Business found me, definitely.
You were there and the business came along and tapped you on the shoulder.
Just in the right place at the right time.
So neither of you then bought an established business in that sense, correct? You both started it from scratch, pulled it up out of the ground. Is that right?
Yes.
Were there particular hurdles to doing that? What were some of the things that you faced with regard to getting your business up and running and making it known to people, putting it on the map and so on? So what were some of your early concerns and early struggles?
Well, my struggle was after getting this and working with it right here in Arizona on 107th Avenue in Union Hills. I learned how to do this, and I had a 5-gallon bucket and a electric drill. And Ace Hardware thought I was the greatest thing going because I was always burning them out. And it got, as it started to grow, it became a family business. And we, I incorporated with my son down in South Carolina. And so there's lots of hurdles. But you know what? You can face those and you take them one at a time and correct it or have it to grow. And then you get other people working with you. And that's the thing. Incorporate your friends, your family. Always talk about it and have it to be a passion with you.
Okay, Gary, now what were some of your early struggles? I imagine that yours are probably somewhat different than Barbie's. What were some of the things that you had to face as a new entrepreneur?
Well, I think they're similar. I think I can bounce off of what Barbie had to say, because I think every person that starts in business has pretty much primarily the same challenges, and those challenges being, what do I do next? Where do I go from here? And that was one of our biggest challenges. Was we would get the licenses, then we found out that we needed licenses for different municipalities, and you had taxes you had to pay for different municipalities. So it was a learning process, and I think probably for the first, oh gosh, probably good 3-4 years, it was a continuous learning process.
Yes.
Month after month after month of, you make the mistake, you learn from it, you go on, and then you learn new things. And then also networking, I mean, was tremendous help for us, because it got us involved with other businesses, other people that had experienced the same thing. And I, you know, true believer of, you know, not 100% networking, but 99.9%, that you got to have networking in your business to learn and grow it.
Would either of you agree or disagree with the statement that you need to have a business plan, a formal written business plan?
Yes.
And if so, what does it do for you?
Well, if you don't have a business plan, it's like starting out on a road trip and not knowing where you're going or the roads or anything else like this. If I'm going from here to New York, I can't just start out and start driving. You've got to have a plan, know where you're going, and have options that if a road is closed or something comes up, then you've got to be resourceful and figure out a way to get around that block in the road and just keep on going. And like Gary said, you've got to think about it, work with it, and work with and network, because you're not alone in this. Everybody can help you, and you need everybody, whether it's a lawyer, whether it's a guy next door, but you need help. Just as when I started lifting from 10-pound bags of chemicals to 50-pound bags, I knew I needed help, and that's when I brought in my family.
It's our belief, my belief in particular, that there are different business plans and different types of business plans. One is for the bank, for the financiers, where you've got to show them all the dollars and where you expect to get them and what you expect to expend and so on and so forth. And that's one type of a business plan. But then there's an operational business plan, and that's the day-to-day operations, and that is very fluid. That can change from moment to moment. Did you find that to be the case, or did you not have one or the other, or did you incorporate them into one?
Actually, I can echo what Barbie said about the roadmap, but I can also say that we experienced it in kind of twofold, because almost immediately within the first year, we brought on additional employees. So not only did we have a three-year business plan out there saying what we're going to do over the next 3 years and how we're going to get there, we also had an operation manual that we gave to each of the employees that indicated and showed how we're growing and what we're going to do and how to get from point A to point B. So we primarily had two. One, the business plan, like you said, for the bankers and the so-called people that need to see them. And then the other one was our operational manual.
Now, would you say that your businesses have grown in these economic times, gotten smaller in these economic times, or are treading water and staying the same?
Well, it's a little bit of all three of those. But I have a certification program that I'm bringing in new people, and that's why it's the BYOB, Be Your Own Boss, is that I'm teaching people how to do this so they can go out and earn money, and because this is a hard time. But here again, everybody has glass in their homes. And by having a product that no one really knows about, it's kind of like something, a fantastic product that no one knows about or understands on etching, that you just put a design on and throw on our cream and let it sit and put it back in the jar to be reused, wash it off, and it's completely etched. So if there's someone in the hearing of this radio show that would like to work and be out there and do something, they can also start their own business and do this type of thing without any money going through hands or anything else like this. So it doesn't have to be a hard time for everyone. So like I say, that it's hard times, and it's up to you. It's up to everybody to do their own thing. I don't believe in sitting back and letting anybody or the government or whoever to take care of you. You can get out there and do it.
Carrie, how about yours? What's your experience in these times?
Primarily ours is, I think it's a combination of all three. Ours has grown. There's a period of time where we was stable for a while, and then and it's gotten smaller. But even though we've gotten smaller out of necessity. We've gotten smaller because we've had to make some hard decisions to be able to stay in business. And at the same time, we've been able to grow the business because we've developed new relationships, and we've developed great relationships that continually are growing, that continually flourish. So Yeah, combination of all three. We've grown, we got kind of stabilized, treaded water for a while, and got a little bit smaller because we had to if you wanted to stay in business.
But you've got quality, and that's quality what counts.
On a national scope, you hear the term productivity, and how these companies are not hiring people. They're just doing more with what they have. They've done their cutbacks, and now they're expecting much more, frankly, from their employees than what they've had in the past. It sounds like on some level there's an element of that with yours, Gary, that you had to make some changes due to necessity, but now you're probably much more productive with fewer people. Is that a safe assessment?
I would say so. We are more productive, but... we could always use more people, but I think the times that we've gone through, it's kind of put a, not a wall, but it's kind of put up a little fear factor in there that you don't want to hire somebody and then 3 months, 4 months later have to lay them off again. And I think that's the experience that I'm gathering from a lot of other business owners that are in the same field that I am, is that, yeah, there's times where you have highs and there's times that you have lows, but you don't want to take that risk right now of hiring someone and 3 or 4 months later having to lay them off, because that we all know that that's what happened in 2007-2008. It really hurt a lot of people.
Well, the highs are extremely high and the lows are extremely low.
Yep.
Then and you've got people that are caught in the middle. It's the employee that's caught in the middle as to whether or not they're going to have a job tomorrow. That adds to a certain element of uneasiness, and also then it adds to uneasiness with the business owner, because at what point, how low can I go before I have to let them go? And the other side of that coin might be, if I let them go and they've been with me long enough, now I've got to pay unemployment anyhow.
Correct.
So is it, what level does that happen? And that's just something that I would imagine you'd have to watch all the time and take into it and take into account.
Yeah, you watch it every day, and I think it's just it's one of those gut feelings that you get from being in the business long enough and the experience that you gather over the years that tell you when is the right time.
Now, Barbie, you basically operate yours with yourself and family. Is that correct?
Oh, no, I have, because I say the certification program that...
Go ahead, your certification program, Barbara.
Oh, a certification program where we teach the people, and then they go into business for themselves, and there is no hiring or firing. It's up to them. It's kind of like Tupperware party where you teach people and you have something that... they can buy and sell, and so there is no hiring and firing in our program. And with the people that I have, they're called master etchers, and they do their own business, and it just grows. And, of course, what you put in is what you get out. So this is the thing that you've got to have the motivation and that you want to do something. And I think there's a lot of people out there because of this economy and everything that would like to do something, and they have that ambition and they just have no place to go. And we'd like them to come to us.
Barbie, have you ever had the feeling along the way that you said, this is just too tough. I'm not going to take it anymore. I'm done. Have you come close to that, or have you had that feeling?
No, sir. Never, ever, ever even crossed my mind, because when the tough gets going, when the going gets rough, the tough get going. And I'm a tough old broad, and nothing is ever going to stop me until I get that jar of etching cream in every household in the world. And right now we're from Thailand to Japan, all the European countries, Canada, and the USA.
Still a lot of households, aren't there?
Absolutely, a lot of households out there.
And then I would expect to hear from you, Gary, that you want to have plumbing processes going in every household in the world.
Oh, sure, but I got to be realistic. and to answer your question with Barbie, I believe in the tough get going, you know, when the times get tough. But I'll tell you, there has been some tough times that, oh, yes, I was ready to throw in the towel and hang it up and walk away. But, you know, there was just, I think a time comes when you just have to think about it, you know, sit down, relax, go somewhere, have a cup of coffee, relook at what's going on. And that's where we came to, you know, making the hard decisions as we got smaller to be more efficient and more productive in what we were doing. So, but yeah, there was times that I said, I'm done, you know, I'm ready to walk away. But, you know, one, I'm not financially independent enough to do that. And two, I like helping people. And, you know, I thought back to, you know, trying to do what's the right thing and to say, you know, I can help people still, you know, even though it's rough, it's tough, but we'll hang in there and do the best. I think we can call ourselves survivors now that we've made it through 2011. We're coming up to closing out 2011 here before long. So
that's good. What do you see as the future of your business, Gary? Your plumbing service.
Primarily, we see it as growth. I mean, you know, we've survived. The people will need some type of plumbing service. I mean, even all the new homes that they built in 2005, 2006, 2007, they're going to need plumbing service. You know, the average home now gets by probably for about 2 years, and then they start developing problems and issues, and people are going to need that service, that residential plumbing service and repair, and that's where we're going to be there and to help them out.
How about you, Barbie? What do you see as the future for your business?
Well, other than having the jar of cream in your home, I'm hoping to see many, 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 many windows and doors and things like that etched.
Okay. I would imagine, and I don't know that much about yours, Barbie, but Gary, yours, I would imagine that as you look at your market, and you see that these homes have, as you said, built in 05, 06, 07, and they start to need plumbing service. It almost sounds to me like it's planned obsolescence. They're just not building them like they used to. Is that entering into what you find when you're out there in the marketplace?
I think the quality of craftsmanship deteriorated because there was such a push, not saying that the home builders were bad in what they did. But I don't think the municipalities, if we can get into a political comment here, I don't think the municipalities were prepared for the influx of homes that were built. So naturally they didn't have enough inspectors to inspect each home. So they did it more on a random basis where you build three, we'll inspect one. You build 10, we'll inspect two, you know, that type of thing. And the other ones, a lot of them went shoddy work. I mean, you know, not shoddy work, but work that was pressed for time to get them out because there was buyers waiting on waiting lists, basically. There were buyers on waiting lists to buy homes. And so the faster they could push them out, the faster they could make their money. And that's one reason why I think, too, you had a number of home builders collapse, number of home builders literally go out of business. And, again, I don't think it's because of the quality. I just don't think there was enough people to really inspect and oversee the building process.
Not enough attention to detail.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what you have to do in any of the trades, any of the craftsmen. Yeah, I mean, you know, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, you've got to be attention to what's going on.
My slogan is, don't move, improve.
There you go.
So that would be the same thing with you, that you go in and correct some of those things for them. Absolutely.
Right, right. What about an exit strategy? I mean, everybody says that an entrepreneur, a business owner needs to have an exit strategy, either to pass it on or for somebody to take it over or to sell it or whatever that might be, but you need to have an exit strategy so that you can maximize whatever it is you're going to take out of your business. Barbie, do you have an exit strategy for your...
Yes. As I said, I have a family organization, and my oldest son is a manufacturer in South Carolina, so he is the heir apparent. Also, all of my master etchers will carry it on when I'm long gone.
So let me ask you this then. I mean, is it the case where you're going to, at some point, you're going to say, I'm going to go to the Bahamas, I'm going to retire, and then I'm going to go to Ecuador and whatever, and I'm going to go to see the tortoises on whatever island that is, and I'm going to travel and do all these things because I've earned it, I'm retired, and I'm going to do that now. Do you see that as part of your
exit, or
are you going to etch your last window as they're carrying
absolutely,
you out 10 toes up?
Absolutely. Everybody, all my family said, well, when are you going to stop doing this, Mom? Well, the answer is never. I have no intention of retiring. I could tell them that when they take me down the aisle at church, I'm going to be looking around to see if I just can't etch some of those gorgeous windows in that church.
All right. Well, I've always said it because we were in the promotional products business also, and I've... And one of the reasons we got into the promotional products aspect of what we do is because you can do it from your deathbed if you wanted to. I mean, you know, as long as you can lift a pencil, you can do it, basically. So it's similar with us. I mean, they're gonna take me out, and I'll be saying sayonara on the on the airways as I go. What about you, Gary?
I don't have a written exit strategy plan, and I think. You know, it's probably because it's something that really we've never really sat down and thought about. And it's, you know, 60 to 70% of the business owners that I know that are in the service industry don't have a strategy exit plan to, you know, really be able to move along out of the business. It's always, most of them are either family owned and operated. Now, obviously, those that are corporate owned or something like that, they have exit strategy plans, but for the family-owned ones and in my business, you know, we have an idea, we have it in the back of our minds, and we have it written down maybe on a scratch piece of paper, but formally, no, we don't.
Well, yours may be a little different in that isn't technically the business owned by your son? Or is it owned by the family?
No, it's owned by the family entity.
The family in its entirety.
Yeah.
Okay.
The family entity needs a trust to make all that work, and that's something that we don't have. So.
Okay.
Something
so
that we do need to work on.
So that's something that you've got to take care of. You've yet to take care of.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I think exit strategies are important because you want to know that when you have had enough and you want to take whatever your portion of it is and go, or take an ongoing income and retire. It'd be nice to have that written down.
Yep.
I don't have one either. So.
Well, I have found that to be the case with at least 60 to 70% of the owners that I've talked to, you know, that are in the service industry. Now, I don't know that much about some of the other businesses, but and it seems to be more prevalent, I think, in family-owned businesses that don't have a family trust, you know, some type of trust to have an exit strategy.
What are some of the challenges that you faced, specific challenges, and not necessarily that Mrs. Schmuckatelli was a real jerk when
yeah.
I went to her house. That's not what I'm talking about. But what were some of the specific things that have happened in your business that were faced by you and you had to put on your cap and start thinking about how am I going to get this remedied? So maybe you can pass those along to other entrepreneurs that might have similar situations.
Well, when we started out, we started out in our son's home, actually his family room. Then we had the opportunity to have a brick-and-mortar storefront showroom and office space. We did that, and then obviously the hard times came, and that was probably our biggest challenge when do we make the move to close the brick and mortar place, and do we try to find a cheaper place, or do we just go back to the home? And we made the decision to go back to the home. So we downsized considerably. I mean, we went from a 1,200 square foot office and showroom and storage facility down to a basically a 100 square foot office, you know, and then a rental of a storage facility to keep all the equipment and stuff.
Well, that sounds perfectly logical to me.
It's logical, but in that process, you come to the point where you start. I mean, you obviously look at the books all the time, but you have to make that decision of, okay, where do you come to that point of actually downsizing, and when do you make that decision? You make that decision when your profits are no longer 2 and 3%; they're now starting to be less than 1%. That's when you got to.
Well, if your profits are going to pay for that 1,200 square foot facility,
then there's no use to have it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's the same situation that I think we've all faced. I know we've faced it. At what point do we come out of the office in the home, and at what point do we come to this facility? And believe me when I tell you, the circumstances had to be absolutely 100% perfect for us to come to this facility. Now, is it possible that we would leave this facility and go back if things don't go where we hope they're going to go? Sure. But you do have to recognize that, don't you? You've got to actually determine that. How about you, Barbie? What now, you mentioned that you had a storefront here in Phoenix up off of Union Hills. What are you still up there?
And
I know
no.
I know you've got one over in that strip center called Barnaby Street. There's a little place in there. You're in there. Are you still going to maintain those, or what are you doing?
Our challenge was, first, my challenge was just not being by myself and getting other people, cloning myself to go out and do these things. That was the biggest challenge of not just being a one-person, one-arm paper hanger, and by getting my master etchers. But then I went from a location that was too large in a strip mall, and so it wasn't a retail operation, and I wanted a show place. And so there is this Barnaby Street Shops is in the Belmar Shopping Center at 113th and Bell Road, and that is more or less my show place where people can come in, see what etching is, because most of the time people do not know. And for those of you in our radio audience, etching is just like sandblasting that you see on windows and doors, but what we do it with a chemical etch that is non-acid, that it's easy to do, and anyone can do it. But this is the thing is, like you say, that you have to get out of your comfort zone. And the Belmar is actually, we say, is kind of an incubator for people that want to have their own show place, their own stores, but they haven't got the finances for it, or they haven't got the background. They have never been in retail. So this is an opportunity to be a vendor in a place that you can try your wings. And then go from there. And or like there's different ones that have services, such as we have a designer that she will come to your home and do all the design work for your home. Well, this is her opportunity to do this, just like it's my opportunity that you come in and see what I mean by etching something on your window or door. So
and you can do all of that there at the Belmar. That's
the
good. That's
yes.
good.
Yes.
Now, Gary, do you see yourself going back to a brick and mortar at some point? Or are you just going to say, you know what, I'm just going to grow right where we are, do as much business as we can, and not have to worry about that expense in the future?
At this point in time, we haven't really given it much thought. I mean, we've thought that, at some point in time we'd like to, but until we get back to, I think, a more stable environment, a more... I mean, not that we're not profitable, but a bigger, I think, profit point to where you can kind of double up the coffers, per se, and make sure you have plenty of money to sustain another downtime. Because another downtime will come. We know that. History always repeats itself. It's been that way for hundreds of years, and we go through this. It's all cyclical. I mean, we go through this, what, probably every 10, 12 years we go through this. So it's going to happen again. So, but this next time we'll be more prepared.
Well, that's the key to anything, I think, is trying to keep yourself prepared and keep your options open as much as you can. One last thing I'd like you to share with us is what are some success tips that you have that you might be able to give to our listeners, and some things that you might suggest that if you're going to be in business for yourself, you want to make sure that you do these things.
Well, one would be to definitely have a business plan. I mean, I'm a firm believer in having a plan, because even if you don't formally put it down in writing, if you have something on scratch paper, at least you've got some idea of where to go. But to have a business plan, and then to network. I believe in networking probably more than anything, and staying in touch with your customer base. Because, I mean, really, those, if it wasn't for the customers, you ain't going to be in business anyway. So, you know, you got to stay in touch with them.
And that staying in touch is important, because every time you lose one, you have to gain two to get ahead.
Or three.
Yeah, exactly.
Or more.
But I mean, in networking, and just to make a point here, and I think if you're new and you're getting ready to start the business or whatever, talk to some other business owners. Go attend two or three networking groups a week, but find two or three networking groups that work for you, and don't get discouraged that you might not get any referrals or leads for several months, because it's all about relationships. It really is. Believe it or not, it's not really what you know, but it's who you know that really counts out there.
Barbie, how about yourself?
Well, to me, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you've got to be ready to accept a new challenge. You've got to be ready to work 24/7, not just as a part-time, but ready to work if it's not on the job, mentally and spiritually thinking about it. I always think of my business as, I've got five children, and my business is my sixth child, and I'll sacrifice for it, I will work for it, I will do anything for it. I'm always looking for other people's opinions. And you've got to pick up something that you like and run with it, and always remember, let God be the wind underneath your wings.
Good advice. I want to. We've got a little bit of time left here, on what we had planned. I want to kind of go off the reservation here, Gary, is with regard to what you were saying about networking, and let's talk a little bit more about networking in and of itself. There are different kinds of networking groups. There are groups that don't. You don't have to pay any money to be there. You don't have a requirement to be there. And they run based on friendships and whatever else, and hopefully they're good for all people. And there are other groups that you have to pay.
They're more organized.
They basically have a script that they follow. They have the same thing that happens every day, every Thursday morning at 7:30. It may be breakfast, may not be breakfast. Everybody gets to do their little elevator speech. One of the members generally gives a little talk about what it is that they do. You're expected to bring leads. If you don't bring leads, you pay a fine. That's one type of networking group. The other one is pretty much, I'm going to call it loosey-goosey. It's just there, and you're having a good time, and you're talking to people, and you get to tell people what you do, and you form friendships, not because you have to, but because you want to. And so my question is, are you a member of both of those groups, to both of you? Are you a member of both of those types of groups? Do you find one of those groups more advantageous over the other?
I don't find them more advantageous over one another. I mean, I am in three different networking groups, and I consider networking also to be the chamber, because I do belong to the Peoria Chamber, and I also belong to the Surprise Chamber. And I think when you're networking, not only like you said, Pete, I mean, to get those relationships and friendships that you develop, you've also got to be willing to work for those other people as well. Always keeping your ears to the ground, because if you can help someone else grow their business, get them referrals and get them leads, I mean, it pays you back in a lot of cases tenfold. But I think Chamber's a great place to start if you're a new entrepreneur. Get involved in a committee, because you get yourself out there, you get yourself visible, and You know, I think the visibility always leads to profitability. And if you can be there and help someone else, then the profits will come. And just keeping a nose to the grind, tending regularly. I know you said that there's some groups that kind of loosey-goosey. You don't have, there's no requirements to be there. Get yourself in one that, that does require requirements, because then you develop a discipline to go every week, and you develop a discipline to help one another and to help other people. And then when you go to a loosey-goosey one, you realize that, hey, you know, if I can institute a few things here that are more rigid, more responsible, then maybe, you know, we'll be able to help more people grow their businesses. And when you help other people grow their businesses and you bring more people into the group, you just, you almost double your referrals. So, and put your money, you know, put your money in your customers, because those are the ones that, you know, will definitely pay you back.
There are a lot of small businesses, entrepreneurs, that cannot afford a huge marketing or advertising budget. And that is definitely a place to have your billboard, if you will, for lack of a better term, in front of those type of people. And then if you're going to be if you're going to be leveraging that, and if it's a good, solid group, and they leverage, and it leverages the way it's supposed to be leveraged. Now, if you've got 15 people in that group, in theory, there are 15 people that are always talking about you to their tribe or to their group of people that, and their associates. So that's what you need.
And if I can, let me make a key note on that, because you don't want to go to these network groups expecting to sell anything. You want to go to these networking groups to educate people on what you do.
Exactly.
Because these people that are in the group, if you look at it as a, if you go with the mindset that this is a business meeting, I'm going as a business meeting, and all these people that are in the group, they're my salespeople. They're my sales force. And if I can educate them on what my business is about and then learn what their business is about, you know, you'll be much better off.
You're scribbling some notes over there, Barbie.
Well, I'm one of these nuts that my mind goes so fast that if I don't write it down, I forget exactly what I'm going to say. But I definitely agree with Gary, I was going to say, because I'm a member of the Surprise Chamber and a Friday group. And I'm hoping to go, Gary invited me one on Thursday mornings. And like you say, the main thing you want to do is to educate people about your business. And those are your salesmen, because the best thing you can have is word of mouth, and that's your best advertisement. And by saying that, I mean your word of mouth is you never, ever meet a stranger. You never say hello other than, and how are you and what are you doing? I don't care if it's a grocery store, the beauty parlor, the mechanics, the stores, any place that you go. You can have a reason to bring up your business if it's really your passion and your heart. I'm sure that Gary doesn't need anyone, because everybody's got a home. So, of course, and oh, you're having a little trouble with your plumbing, or have this or that, or if it's the air conditioning or whatever it is. And in my business, you've got windows, you've got doors. So you have to think about it, like I said before, 24/7. If you really have a passion and you really want to get ahead, and again, word of mouth is your best advertisement. It can also be your worst. Mm-hmm. So always take care of, as Gary said, your customers, and as Pete said, they're your number one concern.
Amen. There you go. It was interesting what you just said there. What people are, you made reference to what people are saying about you. That gets into a whole thing that we, as the Boomer in the Bay Consulting, do, and that's talking about people and establishing your brand and making sure that your brand is what you say it is. In my book, that in as Deborah says, tells me to say, my forthcoming book, there's a chapter there about on branding. And I went and did some research on branding, and there must be 36 or 38, maybe 40 people's variations on what branding is. And branding is what people are saying about you, and it's an expectation they have of you. So when they say Barbie and Etchell, they have an expectation of something. And you want that to be the best as it can possibly be. And when they say BK Plumbing and Plumbing Services, you have an expectation there, and you want that to be the best it can be. And you can ruin your brand very easily, so you have to make sure that your brand is right. And these networking organizations are a good place to test your brand and to further your brand. So that's just something. And I, in my book, I'll make this point in my book. You probably know more about branding than anybody in business knows more about branding than they realize. You probably learned branding when you were in school as a child or as an adolescent or in high school. Because how many times would your parents say to you, don't do that, it's going to ruin your reputation, okay? And you had the favorite teacher that everybody loved because he was fair, made you work for your grades, but gave honest grading scale. That was his brand. You had the person, male or female, that was the class tramp, for lack of a better term, and that was their brand. And when you said Sally Smith, they go, oh yeah, Sally Smith, and that's but that was her brand or his brand. Oh yeah, he's just a player, you know. That was their brand. So your brand is no more than your reputation. And if your reputation is good and it precedes you, and then you prove it to be correct, now you're in good shape. And the networking groups, in my opinion, is a good place to further that.
Absolutely. And something on the branding, like I always tell everybody after I introduce myself and everything, I always tell them, hey, you can forget my name, Barbie, but don't forget my etch-all name.
There you go.
And that's your brand, and that's the most important. When somebody says, oh, I don't remember your name, but oh, or they, I'm walking down the street, and I'll say, etch-all, Miss Etch-all, yeah. And that's it. That's the most important thing. I love to hear that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we're coming down to the end of the show here, and I'd like to thank both of you for being my guests here today.
Thank you,
it's been a lot of fun. Gary from BK Plumbing Services, BK Plumbing and Services, Bath. LLC, yeah. And Bath, yes. And Barbie from Etch-All, we appreciate both of you being here. And you can't do business with two better people than these folks if you're out there listening, so take advantage of it. Again, thanks for joining us today. As always, we've given our listeners something to think about. And you've been listening to the Boom of the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today, we brought you information and conversation with Barbie of Etch-All and Gary of BK Plumbing and Bath. And you can listen to the Boom of the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. And you can also go to blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Listen to all the archives that are there. Remember, we do much more than host this radio show on Blog Talk. Check us out on boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. And be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you at the next show. The Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.